Anne, and tonight I'm joined by Karen and Marima. Hello, you guys. How are you?
Hi.
Hey, I'm great.
All right, good. Are you
How are
still
you?
ha cold? Very, very cold. No.
It's very, very hot here.
I know, I'm so jealous. I love the warm weather.
Ugh.
I know, but it's not you probably would not like this weather. It's been really cold. And I guess next week we're getting like a huge snowstorm, so it only makes it less fun. So this week on Book Hype, we're not going to talk about the weather, I promise. We're going to talk about a couple different things that have just come up. First is The Fault in Our Stars trailer came out, which is very, very big deal. Then, what, half an hour ago, we posted on Hypebeable about J.K. Rowling dropping a bombshell on Harry Potter fans. That's going to be a big discussion, I think, for a very long time. And then our big overarching topic tonight is going to be all about Jennifer Lawrence and how she is the queen of book adaptations. I kind of stumbled upon this when I was looking at some of the things that were coming up for her, and there are so many things that she's doing that are actual book adaptations that I find so interesting. I'm just like, I think we did this one time when we were talking about Anne Hathaway as well. We discovered that she was in like a bajillion and one book adaptations that we didn't even realize until we started really talking about it. So I think Jennifer Lawrence is totally on to that path, but we'll get into that shortly. Let's start off, like we always do, with what we've been reading. So, Karen, what have you been up to this week in terms of books?
Well, this week really sucks compared to last time where I read a bunch of books. I only finished one book, but it was Game Board of the Gods, which I've been reading for longer than I was reading Insurgent. So it was really nice to get that one off my plate. It's by Richelle Mead. It's one of her adult books. And I didn't really enjoy it. I don't think I'm going to be picking up the sequel. Not that it was a bad book or anything or poorly written, because it really was. It just wasn't my thing. It was really complicated with a lot of characters, and I just had a hard time following it. And it took literally the last three pages completely blew my mind. But considering it took me over 400 pages to get to that point, I'm like, this isn't worth going forward. So I'm just gonna kind of chuck that in my, well, I attempted it pile.
Okay, Marma, what have you been up to?
Well, I am back in like study mode, so I've been reading lots of like books that I'm sure everyone else will find very boring. But I have started Tigerfish by Dave Metzenthen. He's an Australian author, and it's this like about this guy growing up and like not in the best neighborhood, etc. And it's this guy and this girl. It's fun. It's like quite dark so far. I'm not that far into it, so I will report back when I'm finished. But I think that's probably a cool one to check out. And I'm also currently doing a reread of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and its various sequels by Douglas Adams, because it's like one of my favorite books ever, and it's one of the best sci-fi books ever written, and it's one of the funniest books ever written. So like, just why not read it again?
Good call, good call. I too have been in study mode because whereas you're just starting, I'm just finishing a semester. So I have finals actually like this weekend and stuff. So if anyone wants to know about B.F. Skinner, I read a lot of his books this past week. They're super exciting, kinda. No, maybe not. So yeah, that's basically how I got to read this week. And I've been really super indulgent and just watched a lot of Sherlock this week too. Because I haven't, as I'm reading B.F. Skinner, Sherlock's playing in the background. That's kind of where I'm at right now. It's not good. It's not healthy.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's pretty much it. Hopefully, next week we'll have more exciting things to report about. All right, so our book fight topic is The Fault in Our Stars. Earlier in the week, the trailer actually leaked, and it was only on the internet for a hot 5 seconds. I was actually really, really impressed at how quickly they got it down because it was on a weekend even. So they decided to release it early because it was supposed to be a Valentine's Day kind of sneak peek. So what do you guys think about the Fault in Our Stars trailer? Karen, you want to go first?
Sure, I will be the light of positivity here. I really liked it. It made me cry, I'll admit it. I thought it was really good. I'm still a little hesitant about Shailene just because, I mean, I don't really know her as an actress. I know a lot of people don't really like her because of Secret Life of the American Teenager. Was that the other thing she was in?
Yeah, that was her
Yeah.
TV
Yeah.
show.
And so, I mean, I don't know her from that or anything, but she just doesn't really scream Hazel to me. But I'm definitely, it doesn't bother me. Like, I'm still gonna enjoy it, and I think I'm gonna end up really liking her as Hazel. But I was really impressed by Ansel as Gus. I thought he did a really great job, and just the couple of minutes that we saw really kind of captured the character. And it was really cool how they grabbed a lot of really important scenes from the book and did them pretty much exactly how I imagined them. I'm really excited to see how close it stays to the book, but even if it isn't, exact, which adaptations never are, I'm just excited to, see the characters come to life, and I'm probably gonna cry a lot, so that's not very exciting, but I think it's gonna be a really good movie.
You so will cry.
Yeah, you
Can
will.
just,
Yeah.
yeah, so much.
What about you, Marima? What do you think?
I like Karen and I were talking about this after we saw it, and it was fine, but I think I have the same ambivalence towards the film that I do towards the book, because like a positive note is a lot of it seems to be lifted pretty directly from the book, like Karen said, which is great. But at the same time, it means if you weren't a huge fan of the book, you're probably not going to be a huge fan of the film. I think it's cool how they've given it this sort of indie vibe. And like it was a good trailer, but yeah, I didn't cry, and I doubt I would cry in the film. I'm sort of not sold on the leads, I have to say, but I really enjoy. Is it Nat Wolff that plays
Yes.
Isaac? Yeah, I
Yes.
think he's great, even though we didn't see much of him. He looks really, really great. So that's fine. But yeah, I mean, it's my same criticisms of the trailer, and I imagine of the film are going to be what I said of the book, which is like, just to me, it's a bit stilted and too unrealistic, like just with the dialogue and things like that, for me to really get into it. But I totally understand why other people love it, and I'll go and see it, of course. Yeah, I mean, I think as far as adaptations go, this is a very good start to being quite a loyal adaptation, and the fan response seems to be incredibly positive.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways it does connect to the book in a big way, which anytime you have an adaptation that can stick close to the book is a really nice thing, because that's usually people's biggest criticisms. I also really liked Ansel as Gus. I think he did a really nice job from what we've seen so far, and I liked the trailer. So we'll see what it brings. And again, there was a huge outpouring for the trailer. People, it was everywhere. It was all over Twitter. It was all over every feed you could imagine. So I think that this will definitely do well this summer, unlike several of the adaptations that have come out, this past year. I think that this has a whole lot more support behind it, and people will actually show up to see it. And Andrew did a really cool article on Hypeable that you guys can check out, and it's the comparisons between the book and the film trailer, and a lot of the stuff is like verbatim text from, like, the dialogue is verbatim from the book, so that's kind of nice for fans too. They can make that connection, and that kind of dialogue is still there. And like I remember pointing out, though, for people who weren't huge fans of that, that's gonna of course not appeal, but at the same time, I think there are many, many more people who found that appealing than not.
Yeah, and I think they did a really good job as well of setting it up in the trailer so that the twist at the end is not revealed.
Yeah, no, I think it, yeah, I noticed that too.
You know what I mean? Even though
Yes.
there's a scene where Hazel and Isaac are both wearing black, and you're kind of like, oh, is this the funeral? Is this after the funeral? But they don't give it away, and they set it up the way that I think all of the promotional material was set up for the book, which was everyone went into it thinking, oh, Hazel's going to die. And I think they're doing a good job with that. So, it's yeah, it looks fine. It looks good, but I wasn't a huge fan, so I'm not going to be a huge fan of this probably. But yeah, it's just sort of an ambivalence, I think. It's not a dislike.
Right, exactly. So we'll see what that brings comes this summer, but for right now we have a couple other things to talk about. Like next week, the Vampire Academy is launching here in the US, and I think the week after it's launching like a week early everywhere it's being released. So it on Friday, it'll release here, So what have you guys, seen the promotional materials and stuff for that? What do you think?
It looks kind of cheesy.
I think it looks so good.
I mean, I think it looks funny, but it looks kind of cheesy.
Yeah, I think they kind of did that on purpose because, I mean, if you really think about it, the concept is just, it is kind of hokey, but I think they're doing a really good job of putting like this really comical spin on it. And that's why I'm so interested in it, because it looks like it's not going to take itself too seriously. And I'm really like, there's a lot of movies like Warm Bodies comes to mind where it could be this really like weird concept that doesn't work out. But as long as it doesn't take itself too seriously, it ends up being way better than you were expecting. So I'm kind of hoping that this kind of goes in that direction.
Yeah, actually, I hadn't thought about it like that, but yeah, that would be great if it was like a kind of vampire parody, but I feel like it's not going in that direction just because of the fans who seem to take it like more seriously, I think, than maybe Warm Bodies fans take that book slash film. To me, it's just like I haven't read all the Vampire Academy books. I've read the Bloodlines books. So when I watch this, it's just like Gossip Girl but with vampires. That's the vibe that I'm getting.
I think it's meant to be way more Mean Girls, because that's Dan and Mark Waters are working on it together, and so I think the idea was to make it much more, it's not supposed to take itself too seriously, but it's also supposed to define itself from the traditional idea of a vampire movie. It's supposed to, you know, step away from like the idea of Twilight and all those other things. So I think that what they did was try to make it not look like one of the, you know, for vampire movies. They wanted to show that it was smart and that it was funny and that it could, you know, it comes across differently. So I think that's the idea behind it. I don't know if it works yet or not. I haven't seen it yet. From what I've seen of the footage, it sticks close to the ideas of the books, because I have read all the books. So it sticks really close to the ideas of the books, and it brings out the funniness that is in the books, because the characters are a bunch of smartasses in the books. They say sassy things and they do crazy things. So I think that that is pulled into the movie with Dan Waters, like, you know, snarky teenage girl comedy that he has, and he's done so well with things like Mean Girls. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it turns out in a week. We'll report back next week.
Do you know if, like, you know, big fans of the books are looking forward to the movie, if they think that it looks good? Because I haven't read the books either. I'm actually hoping to read the first one between now and when the movie comes out, because my best friend loves the books. She really wants to see the movie, so I want to read the book before I go.
I think they are. It's like a split down the middle. You have the people that are complaining because the actors don't look like the people in their head. You know, they're like, well, this one's not pretty enough and this one's not good looking enough. And I'm like, really? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's that reconciliation.
They're saying that this cast isn't good looking enough. Are you insane?
Hey, I didn't make the comment. I'm just saying. Like, those are some of the comments that have come up, that there are lots of different things out there. So, I mean, I don't know. They did the MTV Movie Brawl, and Vampire Academy came in second only to Veronica Mars. So, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of fans out there, and it's a world, I mean, truly a worldwide fan base. It's a huge, huge fandom. So if they show up for the movie will do well. But if they don't show up, like City of Bones, nobody showed up for that movie, and I don't know why exactly, because the fans were all talking about it. They just didn't go. So I don't know.
There is a huge Vampire Academy fan base in Australia who are insanely excited for this.
Yeah.
So, like, the team over here that are doing the PR for them, and also Penguin, who's their publisher, have done such a great job of, like, pimping out this series. So, yeah, everyone's crazy excited, except I just looked it up, and it's not coming out in Australia until the 13th of March. So, as always.
Well, then.
You guys can report back.
Yeah. So, I should be seeing it this week, so I will be able to tell you what I think compared to the book. So it should be interesting, and it'll be interesting to see how it does opening weekend, because it's always such an indicator. And lately, the YA adaptations, even though they're strong and they're, even if they're done well, they just haven't been doing well, which is kind of odd, because the books are like, sell millions and millions. So we'll see. We'll see how it all works out in the end. But now, onto some crazy news that just came out a little while ago. J.K. Rowling, in all of her craziness. I don't know. Maybe the Fantastic Beast thing wasn't enough for JK. She needed a little bit more. She did an interview with Wonderland. I guess it's a magazine in England. And it's with Emma Watson because she's working as an editor there, I guess, like a guest editor kind of thing. So Emma did the interview with JK Rowling. And she says that Ron and Hermione basically shouldn't be together. She regrets having them together in a relationship, that Hermione should have been with Harry. Now, I can hear the screaming of the fandom from all over the world at this point in time, because the Harry and Hermione shippers are having a big ass party right now. Let's face it.
Seriously.
It's a little bit crazy. So, I don't even know. And her reasoning behind this is that she put Ron and Hermione together for emotional, personal reasons. Like, she basically wrote it from the heart. And that's what she, you know, at the time she thought that was best. But she says, looking back upon it, for literary reasons, they should have never been together. Do you guys buy that?
This is the dumbest thing I have ever heard.
Oh my god.
I love JK Rowling, but like, this is so dumb. Like, you cannot argue this case. Do you know what I mean? Oh, P.S. Wonderland, if people are wondering, is like a lifestyle fashion magazine, and they get guest editors to come in and they like do interviews and get various people to do other interviews and stuff like that. So Emma Watson is doing, I think it's the February or the March edition. It only comes out every few months. So, yeah. But, yeah, this is dumb. this is so dumb. I'm not a shipper. Like, I think you guys, yeah, we all know this. I'm not a shipper, but like, I just read the books and I was like, okay, like Ron and Hermione together, because that's what's in the books. You know, I don't really read it and go, oh, it would be so much better if like these characters were together. But I can understand why people do that. But she wrote it. She obviously wrote 7 books setting them up. So it's so stupid to go back and be like, oh, obviously, like, they shouldn't be together in hindsight because they're really different and Hermione's really smart and they would need counseling. Like, oh, no. This is so stupid. I can't deal with this.
Aside from that, like, it's so common to have the main character, you know, like, there was Harry, Ron, and Hermione. For Harry and Hermione to be together, like, I don't know. That just, it's so common. It happens all the time. And I think when you take the secondary, like, guy character and put them with the main female character, to me, that's a lot less common and more genuine. And then if you hadn't done that, like, you wouldn't have gotten the whole Harry and Ginny thing, which I really ended up liking. And I love the character development that we got with Ginny. And, you know, who knows where that would have gone if, you know, Harry and Hermione had gotten together. So I agree. It's just like, what's so bad about, you know, writing a pair of characters together for personal reasons because you did it from the heart and that's what you wanted? You're the author. You can do that.
Yeah, exactly. And I totally agree. One of the things I always loved about Harry Potter was that Harry and Hermione had this fantastic but platonic relationship. And you know, it was like if they had just gotten together, it would have totally negated all of that. And yeah, he would have had, you know, the family that he kind of found with the Weasleys. But Hermione was like his sister, basically. And I always thought that was great because, like you said, it didn't fall prey to the pressure of like setting up the main guy with the main girl and then sidelining whoever's left. It would have been like a lot less interesting. But yeah, this is the bit I actually don't understand. Like, just logically, I don't get how this makes sense, because she says, oh, I wrote it as a form of wish fulfillment. Right. And, you know, it had a lot more to do with like me kind of clinging to this idea of the characters I had versus like good literature. And it's like, that, what do you think being an author is?
I know. I'm so confused by that. And then she goes on to say that, I can hear the rage and fury it might cause some fans, but if I'm absolutely honest, distance has given me perspective on that. It was a choice I made for very personal reasons, not for reasons of credibility. What makes it discredited because you chose to put those two together? I don't understand that statement. Why would you lose credibility as a writer for doing that? You're the author. No one can tell you how to pen your story but you. So who's saying you're any less creditable, that's not the right word, but as a writer, then if you had put other two people together, like, no one can really judge that.
Exactly. That's, like, yeah, this entire thing is kind of preposterous, I have to say.
I just don't get
and
it.
It just feels like this bizarre, like, is she having a midlife crisis? I don't know what's happening. It's the weirdest thing. It doesn't make any sense. And it's obviously, like, going to enrage. I mean, like, we're all just perplexed by this because this is weird. But, you know, there is a huge fan base that is incredibly dedicated to the ship of Ron and Hermione. And for ages in the Harry Potter fandom, like, there was this quite a vicious divide between, you know, like, Ron and Hermione and Harry and Hermione. And, like, this is not going to help this situation.
No. In fact, I can see the fandom, like, coming to a rage all over again. Like, even though the fan, you know, there hasn't been any new material, this alone is going to set debate for, like, months to come. Like, yeah. Months. And it's not going to be,
like,
pretty.
Like, years.
Yeah.
It's going to be people rereading the books and, like, dissecting it and going over, like, oh, it should have been, like, I know. Isn't it just horrible to even think about it? But, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Like, she's the author. She is basically, you know, she's the creator. So she can do what she wants. It doesn't matter what reason she does it for. You know, you can write a book and say, oh, like, yeah, all my characters are, their favorite color is green because, like, my favorite color is green. And, like, literally, that doesn't really make sense. But, you know, it's just from the heart. You know what I mean? It's so, it doesn't compute for me.
No, because, I get it.
Yeah, it's, like, it's just, I don't know. It kind of feels like headline grabbing or something. Or I'm kind of wondering if when the rest of this interview comes out, it will be, like, in a context that makes a lot more sense.
Right. That's the other thing I was just going to say. This isn't the whole interview. These are a couple of snippets that were tweeted out by
Sunday Times.
The Sunday Times. Yeah. So we don't have the whole story, and I get that, but it's just enough to make the rage storm swell until we actually get the whole story. And I don't, the whole story is not going to come out for another couple of weeks. So I think it's just a bit much. Like, literally, we already have over 1,200 tweets on this article, and it came out an hour ago. 3.7K likes on Facebook.
There's already 180 comments on it.
Yeah.
I have to say, my funniest one, wait a second, I need to refresh this. There's the funniest comment on here, I actually, like, burst out laughing. This has gone, like, totally viral, because people care so much, and that's totally fine. Yeah, David said, Steve Clovis must be squealing, which is so accurate.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's all kind of crazy sauce to me, but
it's just dumb. And I can't say the words that I said when I found this app because, like, this is a family-friendly podcast, but you can use your imagination.
Oh, boy, that's awesome. All right, so that out of the way, let's talk about J-Law, little Jennifer Lawrence, who this girl, if you stop and look at her filmography, has been in or will be in more adaptations than One King. Like, almost all of her film work is an adaptation. It's crazy when you actually stop and look at it. So we're going to go through a couple of the things that she's been in, and then there's a couple rumored castings that she's set up for as well. So we're going to talk a little bit about those right now. Of course, everyone is fully aware of the Hunger Games trilogy. She's, of course, Katniss in that. And I enjoy her as Katniss. You guys do too, right? I think we've talked about
I
this
love
before.
Her as Katniss.
Yeah.
Yeah, she does a great job.
She doesn't look like she's been starving, but that aside, she's fantastic.
She really is. And I think that's the big thing about Jennifer Lawrence. If you see her on TV or in an interview, she is the goofiest, craziest girl. Like, you just want to be friends with her. She's lovely. But when you see her in all of these various roles, you're like, how do you take that and make her into these characters? Like, it's amazing to me how much she can transform from who she really is into these various characters, which is always cool.
Yeah, I feel like she doesn't get enough credit for the fact that she's a fantastic actor.
No, but she does get nominated, which is nice.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, when everyone talks about her, they're like, oh, she's so funny, and, like, oh, I just want to be a friend. And then we forget she's been in so many things. And, yeah, like you said, every single character is so incredibly different and so amazing, but then afterwards she's so, like, down to earth about it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So the very first thing that she was nominated for an award was Winter's Bone, which was about 4 years ago, and she was nominated for Best Supporting Actress. And Winter's Bone is actually a book. So if you guys have seen the movie, it's based on a novel, and it's about a girl who's struggling in rural, I want to say Virginia. to basically save her family and her father. There's drugs involved, and at one point in the movie, she gets the crap kicked out of her, and it's just, it's such an intense performance. She was brilliant in it, and she really just, I don't know, just a great job. So have you guys seen Winter's Bone? Either of you?
Yeah, no. I have. I haven't read it.
Yeah, I didn't read it either. I saw the movie, and then I found out afterwards that it was an adaptation. That was, like, her first one, and that was actually the first time I knew who Jennifer Lawrence was. I hadn't really seen her in anything else prior to that. Had you guys seen her in anything else? Did you know who she was before she was in Winter's Bone?
I saw Winter's Bone, like, after I saw The Hunger Games.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I went back and watched it because I wanted to see her. But I remember when that movie came out, there was all this talk about this girl who had come out of nowhere and was amazing and, you know, was nominated and was, like, going to be the next big thing. But I just never saw it. And then she kind of went off my radar until The Hunger Games came back, I think.
Yeah, so then there was – well, I think her next thing was The Hunger Games. I don't really think she did a lot in between those two. Because she got cast as Katniss quite quickly and then had to train how to use a bow and arrow. So she did The Hunger Games and then The X-Men, which is based on a series of comic books.
Well, yeah, X-Men was before.
Was X-Men before
The Hunger Games?
Maybe
I think
it
the
was.
First one was. Yeah.
Okay, it's been
but
so long.
Only just.
Yeah.
They were all at the same time. That's what they
right.
had all these issues with filming and everything, I remember.
Yeah, her schedule was too conflicted because she had so much to do.
Yeah.
Must be tough. Oh, I'm in all these blockbusters. Darn it. Yeah, so we had Winter's Bone, X-Men, and Hunger Games. And then more recently, she had Silver Linings Playbook, which she won the Oscar for. So her, like, Winter's Bone was the first adaptation. She was nominated. The second or the other two were big budget movies that did incredibly well in the cinema. And then Silver Linings Playbook did really well, and she won an Oscar for it. So the girl's done well with adaptations, shall we say.
She was so good in Silver Linings Playbook.
Dude, she does crazy like no one's business. It was brilliant.
Oh, that was amazing.
I need to see so many of these.
Haven't you seen that, Karen?
No, I really
to. Watch that next. That is such a great movie. I mean, it has some questionable depictions of, like, mental health, but, like, that aside, the actual movie is fantastic.
Yeah, it is such a brilliant movie. And that was one of the first films that she was in with Bradley Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's in American Hustle with Bradley Cooper, which is not an adaptation, but we can bring it up. But she has filmed another movie, which is an adaptation, and it is with Bradley Cooper again. Like, they're like the dynamic duo. You put them together, the movie does well. It's crazy.
That's so fun.
They really are.
I like them together a lot.
Yeah. So the adaptation that they filmed, it's not at a distributor yet, but I'm assuming with the, you know, hype around Silver Linings Playbook and American Hustle that it'll be picked up and distributed in no time. And it's called Serena. And this one is an intense book. It's about newlyweds, George and Serena Pemberton, and they travel from Boston to the mountains of North Carolina, and they basically create a timber empire. And so she's this, even though she's from Boston, she becomes like this rugged outdoors woman who, you know, is in charge of this timber empire. And she's pretty badass in it. Then it comes about that George has an illegitimate child, and Serena kind of goes off the deep end a little bit about that, and things don't go so well. And it becomes kind of becomes this, like, intense thriller where what is Serena going to do with the information she has, and is she going to actually kill the people she's intending to kill? Because she gets a little murderous, not going to lie. So it'll be interesting to see how that comes across on film. And it'll be interesting to see how Jennifer plays it, because this character is, she's crazy, but different crazy than in Silver Linings Playbooks. Like, it's a whole other level of crazy. So I think she'd do really
Sounds nuts.
It. Yeah, she's a little bit.
Sounds intense. That's actually one of the things that I really like about her. Not only is she a great actress, but she can handle those action scenes too. And as somebody who predominantly watches action movies, that's really all I like, is, you know, that's something that you don't see a lot of, where you get big name female stars who can do all those action scenes and can also act their butt off.
That's true. She's just so completely, like, well-rounded as an actress, I think. So,
Yeah, I agree.
And then, so, a couple of other things that are adaptations that she is rumored to be cast in. I don't know if she's actually cast in them. And here's the thing. All of the ones I'm gonna, like, read about next are all, and including Serena, they're all incredibly intense books. None of them are just, like, fun, happy-go-lucky romantic comedies. Not a single one of them. Every single one of them is, like, crazy intense in some way, shape, or form. So the first one is The Glass Castle, and it's actually a memoir about Jeanette Walls. And she grew up in a family of, like, complete and utter abuse in a lot of different ways. And so it's really kind of just this crazy story about how this girl grew up and what kind of happened to her as she was growing up. And so, I don't know, it's just, I've read snippets of it, and it's just kind of this crazy tale, and you stop and as you're reading, and you're like, how do people actually live through that? Like, it's crazy. So, there's that one. The other one is called Burial Rites, and it's also inspired by a true story. And it's about the final days of a young woman accused of murder in Iceland in 1829. So it's set in Iceland, and it's by Hannah Kent. And it brings to life the vivid life of Agnes, who's charged with the brutal murder of her former master and is sent to an isolated farm to await her execution. So it's kind of all about what Agnes goes through kind of on this last day that she's supposed to be alive. And then the last one is a John Steinbeck novel called East of Eden. Have you read East of Eden, Marima?
Yeah, I did not know they were adapting this. It's so exciting.
It's rumored, so I don't know how accurate it is. Obviously, it's been optioned if it's been rumored, but yeah. So those are the three that are rumored. Do you want to tell us a little bit about East of Eden?
It's like complicated. It's kind of these two families and their stories, how they're like interrelated, and it's linked back to the Bible and who are the feuding ones? Cain and Abel.
Yes.
I think.
Yes, Cain and
yeah,
Abel.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like it's kind of it's an interesting book because it's very I guess it's like it's quite cinematic when I think about it because it's based so much in the description of place and it's kind of almost more about like describing the landscape than it is about like telling this story, but it's really interesting. John Steinbeck is fantastic. I had no idea that they were doing that, so that'd be really cool. And the others sound super intense.
Yeah, and I think that's what I always find so surprising about what she chooses as an actress to do. Because in real life, we've all seen her being interviewed and stuff. She's just kind of this big, jokey, fun-filled girl. And every single role I think we've seen her in is not like that in any way, shape, or form. I mean, not even close. You know? So I always find it so fascinating.
Yeah. Although, yeah, I mean, that's kind of a good thing because when you become an actor, you know, you do it to play other roles. And I could see why doing something so completely different than the person that she is would be so attractive to her.
Yeah, and she obviously has, like, her pick of the parts now because, yeah, you know, she's, like, the hottest thing in Hollywood.
Pretty much. Right now, she's definitely all the rage. So,
and there's the new X-Men movie coming out as well.
Yes, there is.
Which I'm so excited for.
Me too.
Also an adaptation. I love X-Men so much.
Yes.
Oh my god. Mm-hmm.
And I can't believe they're talking about the third one already. I'm so excited.
I know. The first one was so good. First Class was so amazing. And she was great.
Yes, it was. I love, love. I love the newer ones with like James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender
mm-hmm.
and her.
I love them more. I love Fassbender.
Attractive. I do have a deep affection for Michael Fassbender. It's fine.
It's like the most attractive cast. That first movie was insane. Although I was a bit sad that like Nicholas Holt was a green like a monster for all of it. And I was like, I just want to look at him.
Like now he's going to have to be blue and furry. This is not okay.
I know. It's so upsetting.
But yes, so I can't wait for that to come out too. With all those really awesome like images they just released and everything, it's going to be intense.
Yes. So excited.
Me too. All right. So now we're going to talk about some new book deals coming out. Okay, we're going to call the first three when people on TV want to write picture books. because that's exactly what it is. As I was looking through all the book deals, I'm like, huh? Wait, what? So, like, literally, there's one whole listing, and it was all legitimately actors or singers or TV personalities who wrote picture books for this upcoming year. I was like, oh, this is interesting. So the go ahead.
Who's Bethany Frankel? I know who that is.
She was a New York housewife, one of the Real Housewives of New York, and now she does the, if you guys have ever heard of the Skinny Girl margarita drinks, that's her brand.
Oh,
yeah.
I see.
And she's a TV personality now. She's a talk show.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. No worries. Fine. Yeah. So Bethany Frankel has one. She sold this a little brown, and it's called Cookie Meets Peanut. And it's a picture book about her daughter and her dog. So there's that one. Then there's one from Scholastic, and it will be a holiday picture book written by Nick Cannon and Mariah Carey called Rock and Rose, 12 Days of Christmas, and it will feature their twins.
Ugh.
And then... was that yeah. Karen?
Sorry.
Yes.
Okay.
I agree.
Wow.
This is going to be really random, but I can't like Nick Cannon and Mariah Carey on principle because... they have a beef with Eminem.
That is the best thing I've ever heard, Karen. Ever.
Every time that Karen reminds me that she's like the world's biggest Eminem fan, I don't know why, but it's like the funniest thing in the world.
Because if you met Karen, you wouldn't think that.
Because, like, yeah, because, like, when I met Karen, she was, like, this adorable, like, fangirl in, like, fandom t-shirts, and then she was just talking in depth to me and Andrew about, like, her love for Eminem.
I think that was the first night I met you guys, too.
Yeah, it was, when we were walking you back, and yeah, I don't know why, but for some reason it was hilarious.
Oh, that's amazing. And then the last one is... a book by BJ Novak, and it's called The Book with No Pictures. And yes, it is a picture book.
what?
No joke. It says it's billed as a picture book without pictures, and as the publisher explained it, it turns the notion of the format on its head. Novak elaborated, I want to write a book that would introduce the youngest of kids to the idea that words can be their allies, that the right words can be as fun, exciting, and ridiculous as any pictures. And also, I can't draw. So, I
like
it's kind of cool.
Novak.
I do, too. And I think it's kind of cool that he wants to connect kids to just words and not have it be about the pictures. So, if you think about it, it's going to be a book where their kids are going to have to imagine their own pictures. So, I think that's kind of a cool notion.
Yeah, that does sound interesting.
I just think it's funny that it's a picture book with no pictures. A couple of other books coming out that are actually really interesting sounding. The first one was picked up by Scholastic, and it's by Michael Jensen and David Powers King, and it's an epic fantasy entitled Woven, and it's about a spoiled princess and a ghost who hunts her of a recently murdered young knight, and they embark on a quest to thwart death itself. So I thought that sounded kind of cool. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm not so into the spoiled princess thing, but the rest of it sounds cool.
Yeah, it's not really much to go on.
I know.
That doesn't really excite me all that much, but maybe if there was, like, a longer synopsis, it would be better.
All right.
I like ghost stories. That could be fun.
Yeah, I do like ghost stories as well. All right, this next one should be interesting. So it's by Rachel Kane. She writes the Morganville Vampire series, if you're not familiar with that. It's a pretty cool series. And so this is a young adult series. It's going to be a trilogy, and it's called The Great Library. And it's set in an alternate reality. In the trilogy, the Library of Alexandria, which housed one of the most significant manuscript collections of the ancient world and famously burned down, it still exists in her alternate reality. The library has become all-powerful, and while there is unfettered access to information digitally, it is a crime to keep print books in any personal collection. So then we have a boy from a family of black market book smugglers and a girl who watched her city die. So this is the idea, is these two characters come together and they're describing it as, Merrima, don't hurt anybody, the book thief with Fahrenheit 451 by way of Harry Potter. That's their, like, description of what you can expect in this book.
That is a really weird combination, but I am so there for the Library of Alexandria existing. Oh my god.
Oh my god, I want to live there. I want to live in that world.
So that's what I figured. It's a really cool concept, and then I got to the part where it's like, oh, it's the book thief, but I'm like, uh-oh. That could end badly.
The book thief, Fahrenheit 451, and Harry Potter, they're like three of my favorite books, so...
Oh, hey, now.
That could be great, but also terrible. So we'll see how this goes. But yeah, I'm all for a world where the Library of Alexandria still exists. You can tell that we're huge nerds.
I know, we're like,
we got really excited
about this.
As a small explanation, basically, like, the Library of Alexandria burning down is like the biggest tragedy of ancient history. So this would be great. Yeah. But it sounds fun. I don't know. I'll check this out.
Yeah, I thought that one sounded really cool. And it was a pretty big deal. So it should be, and that one comes out, I think, in 2015. So we have, as always, a ways to wait. But gives us something to look forward to.
It's just funny to me that the Rachel Caine is going to be a trilogy, because the Morganville vampires have, what, like 15 by now or something? Yeah. And I'm like, oh, only a trilogy. Like, whatever.
Well, maybe right now it's just a trilogy. It could grow. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's always that possibility. Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens when it comes out. Hey, Merriman, did you ever tell us what you thought about The Book Thief, by the way?
Oh, my God. I don't think that I did.
No, you didn't. I've been waiting.
Oh, okay. Guys, it's a bit sad. I didn't love it. It was fine. But, like, the way I've been describing it is the movie was, like, quite muted, as in it just felt like a really toned-down version of the book. And, it was a bit sad. Like, there was no tears or anything, which, as you know, like, when I read the book, I cry all of the, like, water in my body out. So, it was, I don't know. I thought there were some great moments in it, but, yeah, it was just... I honestly don't, like, I saw it once and I don't know if I would watch it again.
That's sad. Too bad.
Yeah, it was a bit sad. But then again, like, at the same time, I was really, really excited. But I kind of expected that it would be a disappointment because I love the book so much. Like, it could never live up to those expectations. And so much of my love of that book is connected really to the, like, literally to the words in the book. And, you know, seeing that visualized is a very different experience. And I think for me that immediately lessened it to see it playing out versus, like, seeing it in your head. So that's fine. Like, on a kind of technical note, I was a bit sad. I feel like the narrator was quite poorly done because he just came in and out and it didn't really make sense when he was there and when he wasn't. So I feel like they could have used him a bit more because he was such a cool part of the book. And the kid that played Rudy, though, like, will haunt my dreams. He was fantastic. He was so perfect. And the guy that was Max was really, really good as well. That, like, there were moments that I enjoyed a lot, but yeah, it didn't come close to the experience of reading the book.
Yeah, I mean, the book is, like, the language in the book is just spectacular. Like, the way they paint he paints a picture in that book is amazing, and I don't think you could ever really do that with a movie. It just doesn't, you can't
exactly
translate. Yeah, well, at least you didn't hate it. That's good.
No, I didn't hate it. And I don't know why. Maybe it's because I felt like it was in the spirit of the book, you know. It just didn't quite work. It's not like Harry Potter where they were like, oh, story, who needs this story, let's do our own thing, and, like, then off whatever happened. But yeah, I felt like, you know, they had good intentions, and the acting was, like, overall pretty solid, but yeah, it just felt kind of toned down, so that's fine. The score was beautiful, though. Oh, John Williams kills me always. That was probably the best bit.
This is true. All right, so does anyone have anything else now that we've talked about The Book Thief, as always?
Book Thief. hype. No. I don't think so.
Okay. So that wraps up this episode of Book Hype. Please be sure to leave your comments on any of the things we discussed or anything you would like to see us discuss in the future. I'm dying to know what everyone thinks about this J.K. Rowling bit because, I just can't. It's going to be crazy. Anyway, so we will see you guys again next week or talk to you guys again next week, depending how you want to look at that. So until then, I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Arma.
Bye, guys.
Bye.